Hello and welcome to this episode of the Global Innovators in Business series.
In this series, we bring leaders and innovators from different fields to share their advice and experiences with students and young professionals to drive impact through their careers. Our guest today is Tracy Young. Tracy is a co-founder of TigerEye, a sales technology company geared towards solving problems for enterprise sales teams. He was also previously the co-founder and CEO of PlanGrid, a construction productivity software company. PlanGrid grew from 5 co-founders to 450 people and helped build over 1 million construction projects around the globe before it was acquired by Autodesk in 2018 for $875 million. This interview is dedicated to the World Wildlife Fund, working on conserving nature and reducing the most pressing threats to the diversity of life on Earth. Thank you, Tracy, for joining us at the Global Innovation Business Series.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. So we usually start by dedicating the interview to highlighting a nonprofit that you choose. And why did you want to dedicate this interview to the World Wildlife Fund?
So our planet's burning up right now, and we're in the middle of multiple irreversible crises. There's climate change, there's mass extinction, and this is a nonprofit that is effective. They're trying to change policy. They're working with governments all over the world. They are on the ground trying to help out life of all forms, and I hope you will support them, whether through a donation or activism work or volunteering your time with World Wildlife Fund.
Amazing. To start, tell us about your parents. What did you learn from them, and how did they affect who you are today?
That's my favorite interview question, by the way. My parents are refugees of the Vietnam War. They are ethnically Chinese and Vietnamese. They got on a boat after the war ended, and they went on Destination Nowhere. Can you imagine that? That you are so afraid of your life and your child's life that you're totally willing to leave everything behind, board a fishing boat that probably can't cross the ocean, and then just sail south. Don't know who's going to pick them up. Don't know where they're going to land. They ended up getting picked up by the Malaysian Coast Guard, and they lived out of a refugee camp in Malaysia for some time. And then they were sponsored by Lutheran priests out of San Bruno, California. And that's when I was able to be born in the United States. Growing up, my parents worked incredibly hard. Both of them worked 2 jobs for many years there. And I think that it really inspired me to be who I am today. So much of what I did as an adult was just to make them proud. I wanted desperately to show them that their sacrifice was worth it, that I wasn't going to let them down. And of course, they're so proud of me now. But those are my parents.
What do they do as jobs? And how was your childhood in that kind of circumstance?
I actually don't know. I should ask them this. I don't know how much education they had. I mean, it's like to the 3rd grade level, to the 8th grade level, that they're not educated. And so all the jobs they had were entry-level work that people did not want to do. They finally saved up enough money to build their own distribution business. And it's a very simple business. You buy goods in bulk, and then you market up, and they sold goods to restaurants. So this is like the paper goods, the plastic goods, frozen stuff, grains, sugar, anything that a restaurant could need, that is what they sold them.
And when you wanted to become an entrepreneur, what did they say? What was their reaction?
Yeah, I think as business owners, they were very supportive. I was working in construction at the time, so they were also not. I think they were happy that I was a construction engineer, but I think they were just constantly worried about the gender ratios on the construction site. They just felt like it was dangerous, although I worked with really great people and it wasn't the case. And so when I told them I wanted to start a company, they were just thrilled. They're like, yes, I think you should go be your own boss and get out of the job site.
So from this background, you started to build PlanGrid with your co-founders. I think before we jump to TigerEye, we really want to understand how that came about, what problem are you trying to solve, and how did you find your team to do this?
Steve Jobs announces the first generation iPad in 2010. And my co-founders and I looked at each other and we thought, hey, this is like really cool. This is perfect for construction. We're unable to use software in the field. There were tablet PCs at the time. The thing is like 7 pounds and the battery life lasts only an hour. And it was so heavy. In fact, I had one of these straps that go around your head so you could carry it on your neck to help support it. And so when we saw the first generation iPad, the first thing we tried to do as construction engineers, my co-founder and I, was load up our own blueprints on it. And a box comes up on, I think it was like Adobe Acrobat Reader. A box comes up and it says out of memory. And it was just one sheet of blueprint that we're trying to load up. And on the project that I was on, there were like 5,000 sheets, right? So we were looking at Apple Maps and it feels like this is totally possible. Of course, we didn't know anything about software. So we went to our software friends and said, hey, how hard would it be to build this? And they're like, it would be hard. This is a good idea. You guys should learn how to code. So we didn't actually learn how to code, but we convinced our incredibly talented software developer friends to quit their jobs and build ClimateGrid with us.
Okay. And going from there, what was the leap of faith that's from being an engineer in the construction job to taking on a co-founder role with, I think this is your first startup at the time. So how did you take the leap of faith?
Yeah, all five of us were engineers, construction engineers, software engineers, and we were incredibly frugal. So all of us had good savings in our bank accounts. And if you can get rid of your apartment, which most of us did, and if you can get rid of your car, which almost all of us did, except for me and my other co-founder, the two construction engineers, I think, kept our cars. You get your personal burn rate to a certain point that you can just see that, hey, if I didn't work, I could survive for the next 18 months. And I think having that much time and space was made it really easy for us to make that decision on quitting our jobs and being a founder, working for nothing. Not sure if it's going to work out because it didn't matter. We could take care of the necessities, which was food and staying in our parents' house. We eventually got funded by Y Combinator. And at that time in 2012, I think we only got either $20,000 or $25,000 investment from them. Now YC invests $500,000 at least in each company they fund. But that $20,000 was enough for us to rent out a hacker house in Sunnyvale, California, where all of us lived and worked out of. And that was our most costly expense. Everything else is cheap.
And then going into the next phase, how did you transition from a founder into an operating CEO? How did that process, how is it different from a founder versus running a company?
Yeah, it's a good question because they're very different skill sets. So as a founder, you're rewarded for being crazy. You are the hero. You are actually constantly trying to find hero work at a startup because you are just trying to become 10 people at once, trying to get work done. Things are on fire and you're working late nights to put out the fires. And this is what founders do. I think especially as a young founder, it feels meaningful work. As a kids figure, every instinct that a founder has to be a hero and go do the work themselves, something is broken, is completely wrong because there's a team here now. So the team needs to do the work. And how do you inspire and motivate the team and help them keep on track and lead them is something I was very bad at. In fact, every single time something bad happened, I would try to airdrop in and help out that customer with their customer support issue. And then can you imagine our customer support team? I think at the time it was 5 people. They look at me like, do you not trust me to do my job? Why did you hire me if you're just going to jump in and handle all the issues? Don't you have something better to do? Same goes for marketing. Same goes for product. Same goes for every other department in the company. And the good news is it is a muscle that you can work on. And gosh, I've been a founder and CEO for something like 12 years now. I think it's Malcolm Gladwell that says if you can do something for 10,000 hours, you just become an expert in it. Like I've been a founder and CEO for something like 80,000 hours. What that gives me is just a lot of practice to just back off and chill out and look at the problem and maybe ask some questions and help guide the team that way and lead the team that way. Without actually trying to go in and jump in the fire and doing it myself.
If this advice was translate it to someone who's just starting their own company and managing a small team? What are the three things that they should think about before they try to jump in?
I think we all want to feel like we're contributing at the company. We all want to feel like we're doing good work, or why are we here? And so for new managers and new leaders, it's important to keep that in mind. That is the strongest, that was always my strongest desire in every single job I have, including the job I have right now. I just want to do a good job for myself and for the team. And so if we can understand that, then we can see where our team members are coming from who are working for us if we're in a manager position. So that's number one, is understanding the people that work for you. Two, setting clear goals and expectations. And then three, just really communicating that with them, whether they're doing a good job, letting them know they're doing a good job, or if they're not doing a good job or they're not meeting the expectations, to communicate with them about that also. Those are probably the three most important. And then if there's a fourth one, then I would say repeating the goal of this team over and over again, because oftentimes we're just knee deep in the work that we're doing and we forget to just come up for air and see the bigger picture. Why are we working so hard on this thing? Why am I so stressed out about all these things I'm working on? Oh, there's this goal we're trying to work towards. And oh yeah, I can totally see what I'm doing is working ourselves there, even though it's going to take us some time. We need that reminder.
Yes, having the vision, having the ultimate prize in the horizon, and making sure that each person is working towards it is really motivating and helpful in building the team dynamic. And I think just you touched upon your desire now is to do a good job. What brought you from already selling a company, very successful, being at YC, giving advice and giving future founders their advice, and then jumping back in, going through YC again to start your own company? What's made you take the leap of faith of doing this entire process again and jumping into the fire again?
Yeah, I think I have a medical condition sometimes. Why didn't I just go on a beach and sit there forever with my family? I really like building software. I really like working with cool, talented, smart people and building with them. It feels good for me. It's stimulating. It's hard. It's fun. And I like that. The other reason we decided to start a company is because my co-founder and I are married. We started PlanGrid. Now we started TigerEye. We have three kids together. We also worked as visiting partners at Y Combinator. And while we were there, we got to work with incredibly talented founders, but we were also so incredibly confused why it's 2021 and there are so few women around in this community. And it's not just unique to YC, it's just unique to entrepreneurship and especially the companies that get funded. And so part of starting TigerEye was activism for us. We really didn't like the stats here and thought, okay, there's one thing we can control, which is if we start a company, then that's one more towards more women in tech, more women leaders. And I think that as parents, this is important to us because you heard my story with my parents. Like, they totally influenced who I became. And I want my children to know that in a world where there is a lot of things happening and a lot of trends that aren't looking good, that instead of complaining, they can do something about it. Even if they're just one person, it's still a change. And my hope is that there's influence at play, right? Another woman sees me working and they're like, she can be a founder. I can be a founder too. Great. And then she'll go on and influence more women. And then the chain reaction just goes off.
That brings up a lot of topics that I really want to talk about too. I guess one of the key questions I had was, do you ever feel a responsibility to represent this demographic of Asian female entrepreneurs? And is that sometimes a burden, or is that something that you think is a badge of?
It's a privilege, because the reality is the most important decision of my life wasn't made by me. It was made by my parents. I always think about this alternate universe where my parents didn't leave Vietnam. and me being born there and what kind of life that I would have had and opportunities, the lack of opportunities I would have had. And the reality is, if you look at minority women in the world, the vast majority of them were not given the opportunities that I got to have as an American citizen growing up in Silicon Valley. And so it is my privilege to be a good role model here for the next generation. It's not a burden.
Yes. How have you found ways to encourage or to inspire, to motivate that equity outside of being the one to take another step to jump in as well and being the additional number? What are other ways that we can do as students to help encourage it?
Yeah. So I believe that discrimination against women is real, right? I've experienced it myself. I've talked to friends who have experienced it. And what I would tell young women or any woman thinking about founding a company is that they will likely meet discrimination during their time as founder or as a professional. And that's just the reality. But it will not be the difference between them finding success or failure. Like, it will not be so bad. It'd be hard for them, but it won't be so hard that they can't be successful. That in the end, it's just a rounding error and just some moment of a bad experience. And if they really want to build the thing that they want, if they want to build this new technology, if they want to solve this problem, they can totally do it, even if the odds are against them today. Don't let that fear keep them from doing what they want to do. And I think that goes for men too, right? Goes for everyone. There's so many stats out in the world. You can find something against you in your demographic. That's the reality. But it shouldn't prevent them from following their passion.
What are the challenges you faced along the way?
I have been in investor meetings and customer meetings where I gave the presentation and then all the questions were directed at my male founders or male teammates. So, wow, do I not exist? And I not just give this entire presentation? All right, no, don't ask me any questions. That's cool. And people have said crazy stuff to me over the years. It's still like far and few in between, but it did happen. It's crazy things like, I think you're too young. Oh, you're not too young. You just look young. I think you're too small. I think you're too short. I think you're just the way I look wasn't good enough to be a founder, which has nothing to do with that.
Going to Tiger Eye, what is the problem you're trying to solve in Tiger Eye? And I know that this is one of the issues that you faced when you're at PlanGrid, is if you could use a software like this to automate some of the processes, it could help keep independence even longer. So what problem are you addressing and how is this achieved?
Yeah, all I know to do is build software to make my last job better. TigerEye is the software I wish I could have used as CEO of PlanGrid to accelerate growth. I really think this is what would have made the difference between us having to sell to Autodesk and us still being a standalone growing company today. Because the reality is, like, PlanGrid doesn't exist anymore. The product is still there, but it's now morphed into something else. It's rebranded to Build. And we're still in stealth, so I can't say too much about Tiger. What I can say is that we help teams track and predict the future performance of their sales org.
What is the challenge of the current process?
Yeah, there's a lot of Excel spreadsheets. And I will say that I know a lot of people who like looking at spreadsheets. I am not one of them. There are spreadsheets so complicated that there is like the master spreadsheet and that gets warped into 12 other spreadsheets that have to deal with version control problems. And then they get merged back to the master spreadsheet and then everything breaks and then it gets presented to the CEO. And it's, I don't trust that. I don't trust anything on here, even though you guys have been working on it for a few months. And I'm so sorry, we're going to have to work on that again. And as a founder who was leading a fast-growing startup, I can tell you that spreadsheets just do not work for running a business.
A lot of companies face everything on spreadsheets. And I think the software is that Oracle and a lot of big companies is built around like this idea of spreadsheets is the future. I know this is a very entrenched idea that this is the building block of a company's finances and sales. And what do you envision in the future world?
Oh, I still envision spreadsheets being around, right? I just would like founders and leaders to not make decisions off of them, that there's better software that can be used to be strategic from. It's funny that you say this because when we were building for construction, we were really replacing paper. And of course, paper is still around. It's just everyone knows it sucks and it sucks so bad. You actually don't want to see paper on a job site because there's better software now to do your jobs from. And I think it's the same analogy for spreadsheets. Like spreadsheets, of course, will still be around. People will just be using better tools to do their jobs in the future.
I'm looking forward to what you guys will build. And one of the questions that I think is really interesting is, from your perspective, how have you found culture and belonging into the company?
My coworkers are really my community. It's always been. I've always been really close to the people I work with. I think it has to do with just being a builder. I like building with people. I used to build hospitals with people, and then I spent almost 10 years building PlanGrid with people, and now I'm building TigerEye, which many people who are also formerly PlanGrid. In terms of culture and belonging, I just think it's really important that we recruit people from different walks of life because their perspective is so valuable for our ability to solve problems together. But there has to be a foundational connection. And that's really our core values, that no matter how old my colleagues are, or how young my colleagues are, where they're from, what they like to do in their lives, and it's all different, it's all over the place. We all really care about working with humble, hardworking, talented people. We want to work with people who can be authentic and direct, that if they're not happy with us about something, they can just look us in the eyes and tell us directly while still being respectful. These things are really important to us. And I think that's been really important for our ability to maintain the culture that I want to see at the company.
What is one instance where you think the culture of the company and what you envisioned did not align? And how do you adjust and how do you like change that, since it's really difficult to shift culture?
Yeah, and I get the luxury of writing core values with a bunch of lessons learned for a second time, right? What can I say here? We had core values at PlanGrid. We didn't live by them. I didn't live by them. I'll tell you, one of our core values was we don't hire jerks, except that I did hire them and I kept them in the building, which was even worse. And what that signaled to the rest of the team was, hey, these core values are all bullshit. She doesn't even care about this one. So how could she care about all the other ones? We don't have to follow it, which means that the core values were completely meaningless. This time around, we are talking about the core values all the time. We are making decisions by the core values that we have in place. We can't lax on one of them, right? Because if we lax on one of them, then all of them, are they even real? Do they even matter? As we saw with our last company.
As the company changes, does your core value change as well?
No, the core values shouldn't change. They should be in place forever. Maybe you don't like your core values, and that's okay. You don't like your core values, you can burn them down. You rewrite them to something that you believe in so much, you can live by them and ask your team to live by them also. But as the team grows, culture is dynamic because everyone that comes in brings their unique personality and flavors in life. And it changes the team overall. But there are foundational values that are in place for a reason. And so as long as those are still there, it should still be in the same. You should still feel what you did a year ago, even if there's 100 people more in the building. But that's how powerful core values can be. If you are leading by them, if you are living by them, if you are hiring and firing by them, you can't keep a consistent culture
What is the culture in a construction environment? Maybe a better question is like, how has your background and work in construction influenced you in managing or influenced your thoughts in leading a company?
That's a good question. And, you know, it's been a long time since I've worked in construction. The last time I was on a construction site as with a hard hat as a worker was 2011. Okay, let me think about this. There's lots of differences, right? I remember working in the rain and thinking I need a better jacket. That never happened in software. I'm always inside a building. I remember having to take off my boot outside because it was so muddy and I couldn't walk inside. Like that, again, never happens in software. I really liked the leadership I had when I was working in construction. We had a superintendent named Alan, and he was like, he didn't go to college. He went straight from high school to the carpentry union with the best of his group and worked his way all the way up to superintendent, which is basically king of the job site. And what Alan was really good at was he was, of course, a competent builder. He knew the construction. He built the construction schedule, and it was a schedule that would work and that wasn't missing any activities. The critical path was the critical path. He was really good at communicating what we were doing today, what we were doing this week, what we needed to look out for a month from now as a whole construction team, which is like so many other companies. Because there's the electrician, there's the plumbers, there's the framers, et cetera, et cetera. And Alan knew everyone on the job site. Maybe not by first name, because there's like at any given point, there's 500 to 1,000 people on the job site. But he would just know something about their lives that he had taken the time to ask them about their lives outside of work. Do they have dogs? Oh, your child is playing soccer. Maybe they really liked a certain breed of cars. I don't know. Alan just knew a lot about people. And he also knew, as he's talking to them about their lives and listening, he was also really good at evaluating them and builders. So he knew who the best performers are and who the low performers are. And his deal was he always wanted to give people a chance. Even when I thought that he shouldn't give this foreman a chance because they suck, Alan felt that it was his failure that this foreman was failing in their roles. And I respected that about him. And I'm sure he's had an influence on how I am a leader today because that was truly the best leader I worked for.
Going from that, what would be your advice for students thinking to drive impact in their career?
I really like this younger generation. You guys are informed. You care about the world. I follow you guys on Reddit. I know the conversations you guys are having in the comments. I would say continue to not stand for status quo because it ain't working out. There are a lot of problems in our world. And I would also say it is okay to be a bit irreverent. I don't mean disrespectful. Of course, we always have to be respectful, but we can be irreverent of the status quo and want to see change for the better. Because there's a lot of things happening in our world, and hopefully I'm long dead when it gets really bad, but you guys are going to still be around, right? And build the future that you want to live in.
Thank you so much, Tracy. Appreciate this amazing advice. And I think don't know where else to end it than go the future you want to live in.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.